Friday, Imam Hassan, Babul Jannah, and Raf'at, Educational and International Institutes, and Qumrud Lake. When the 7th Abbasid Caliph Ma'mun invited Imam Reza to Marv, Hazrat Ma'sume moved to Iran in the company of a number of Shia Muslims to meet with and join Imam Reza. But just outside Qom, she was taken ill. In her 80s at the time, she was bedridden in Qom for 17 days before she passed away. Her body was buried in a well-respected place in the city of Bagh Babylon. Today, Bagh Babylon is famous because of Hazrat Masumeh's shrine that houses a magnificent monument. This stately edifice is one of the most important religious shrines of the Islamic world. The original shrine was built in the middle of the 3rd century Islam and was expanded substantially between the 4th and 6th centuries when a dome and artwork were added to it. Qom Azam Mosque, located right next to Hazrat Masumeh's mausoleum, is the city's Azam Mosque, known widely as Ayatollah Burujerdi's Azam Mosque. It was built in 1918 through the efforts of Sayyid Hossein Tabotabai Burujerdi. The architect of this splendid monument was a man named Hossein Lorzadeh. It is classified among the 3 largest veranda mosques. Its dome stands at 24 meters high. Today, the mosque is the Qom Seminary's most important teaching center. The mosque is now merged with Hazrat Masumeh's shrine. Recently, its dome was adorned with large thin flakes of lusterware, donated and produced under the supervision of Haj Hassan Jaber Ansari. The Tabotabai Mosque, spearheaded by Hujjatul Islam Agha Muhammad Tabotabai, the son of Ayatollah Haj Agha Hussein Qomi, a great mosque with an elevated dome, was built adjacent to Hazrat Masumeh's mausoleum. Famously known as the Tabotabai Mosque, it was built between 1981 and 1991. In the 10th century Islamic era, Shah Tahmasp Safavi used bricks to build the first sepulchre on the mosque. Sometime later, an additional sepulchre made of transparent white steel was installed around the original sepulchre and a wooden door was fitted in the northern frontage. In the 13th century Islamic era, Fath Ali Shah Qajar replaced this door with a luxurious golden door. He also upgraded the sepulcher by having it coated with layers of silver and installed on a malachite pillar. With time, the sepulcher lost its radiance, so in the 14th century in Islamic era, it was again renovated. Finally, in 1973, the form of the sepulchers was altered and its height increased. Fath Ali Shah Qajar had the shrine flagstoned with marble. He believed the spiritual gusts around Hazrat Masume's shrine has to step on the best of stones. Atiq Courtyard. In the 10th century in the Islamic era, Shah Begum Khatun, the daughter of Shah Ismail Safavi, built a square-form courtyard with three verandas. Later, Fath Ali Shah had it remodeled into an irregular octagonal shape. This octagonal form is said to have been built on the memorial of Imam Reza Thaman al-Hujjaj, the brother of this holy woman, pointing to the fact that Imam Reza was the 8th Shia Imam. Gradually, the number of verandas in the courtyard increased. At the moment, it has 7 of them, 4 on the south side and 3 on the north. The verandas of the Atiq courtyard are the most famous within this court. They were built on the order of Shah Begum and gilded during the reign of Fath Ali Shah Qajar. They constitute the entrance of the heavenly courtyard. Atop each veranda, a hadith inscription in white thulf is displayed on an azure background. Above it, a myriad of tiles and inscriptions. Imam Khomeini Great Sanctuary. It is one of the greatest architectural feats after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, featuring a multitude of porches, entrances, and other facilities. Called Balasar Overhead Mosque, it is situated nearby and overhead to Hazrat Masume's shrine. That's where it draws its name. In the Safavid period, it served as a motel. Inside the shrine and next to the holy tomb of Hazrat Masume, a mausoleum houses the eternal resting places of grand ayatollahs, scholars, and outstanding scientific and religious figures, the largest grouping of revered Muslims anywhere, particularly in the Shia world. Qum is called Darul Aman. Some of the renowned and compassionate scholars buried in the mausoleum here are Allames Tabatabai, Khansari, Golpayegani, and Bahjat. martyr of love and writing and eminent ideologist Murtaza Mutahhari is also buried here. In the INM mirror courtyard of the Holy Shrine lies the mausoleum of freedom crusader Sheikh Fazlullah Nuri, born in 1843 and killed in 1909. Sheikh Nuri's memorial is symbolic among the liberal crusaders of constitutionalism. This is the tomb of martyr Ayatollah Dr. Mufatteh. He was born in 1889 and martyred in 1939. The Faizia Theological School was founded in the Middle Ages of Islamic history and is located in Qom next to Hazrat Masuna Shrine in Astane Muqaddase, Holy Threshold Square. It was registered as a national heritage in 2007. Astana School was replaced by Faizia School in the first half of the 13th Islamic century. According to valid historical documents, the school was established in the middle of the 6th Islamic century and was renovated in the Safavid era. The two-story building features four verandas. The 40 chambers on the first floor were built in the Qajar period, and the other 40 on the second floor were built in the 14th Islamic century. The oldest part of the seminary is where the southern veranda is and is decorated with beautiful tiles belonging to the Safavid era of 1939 AH. It is regarded as the gateway to the Atir courtyard and Hazrat Masuma's shrine. The Darul Shifa Theological School is attached to Faizia Seminary. It was founded in the beginning of the Qajar period. Originally, it was called Fath Ali Shah School. Kamran Mirza Qajar had its entrance renovated and its chambers refurbished. Since then, it has been called Darul Shifa. The building lay in ruins, but was renovated after the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The seminary now has 200 chambers and a modern conference hall. The house of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Khomeini is located in Shafaiyeh district of Qom. It's about 100 years old. Imam Khomeini purchased it in 1956. He lived here till 1963. Eventually, in 1994, it was donated to the house of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by his now deceased son, Sayyid Ahmad Khomeini. It was registered as a national heritage in 1996 by the Iranian Cultural Heritage Organization.
You're listening to Husseiniya from IRIB English Radio by Sayyid Abbas Rezavian. Labbaik Ya Hussein.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. May our peace and salutations be upon you, Imam Hussein. I send my condolences to you, brothers and sisters, for the tragic event of Karbala. We were talking about benefiting truly from Ziyarat Ashura, this great gift from our fifth Imam, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, alayhi salam. Today we're going to talk about the last station, the spiritual journey that we were talking about, that first, the first part was bala, meaning that calamity that happened upon Imam Hussein. The second part is having huzn and grief for this bala. And the third is aligning ourselves, our mind, body, and soul with Imam Hussein. The fourth part is after we do this, we take these necessary steps during Muharram or during throughout the year. We ask Allah to make us reach al-maqam al-mahmud, the praiseworthy station. As we read in Ziyarat al-Ashura, وَأَسْأَلُهُ أَنْ يُبَلِّغَنِي الْمَقَامَ الْمَحْمُودَ لَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ I ask him to make me attain the praiseworthy status that you enjoin with Allah. What is al-maqam al-mahmud? The praiseworthy status in the Quran is for the Holy Prophet of Islam. In some of the narrations, it says that he has the capability of intercession, and that is what is meant, because he will intercede in the behalf of the sinners and will help them to attain heaven. Two, it is the position that the Holy Prophet had, and that is his true maqam, his true status will be noticed and apparent in the hereafter. As you know, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, their real status, who they really are, will be shown in the hereafter. There are very few people that can understand who they are, but in the reality of the matter is, they'll be shown in the hereafter. So Imam Hussein, the Prophet of Islam, has this maqam. The Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, they have this maqam. And in this ziyarat, we ask Allah for us to reach this maqam. We are taught that pray for things that are very, very high, even though we might think of ourselves not fit for this position, but we're asked to pray, give us maqam al-mahmud. Now, what happens when a person reaches maqam al-mahmud? What happens when he does grieve for Imam Hussein? He takes his actions and aligns it with Imam Hussein. What happens to such a person? He reaches complete heaven. His life becomes heaven. And he begins to enjoy life. He begins to enjoy his spirituality. And that is the entire purpose of all this worship that we're doing. That is the purpose of reciting Ziyarat al-Ashura, so we can get an elevated position. And what happens when somebody reaches that elevated position? They will be completely joyful, completely happy. They'll reach complete sa'adat. A lot of times when we talk about, in the modern world, when we talk about something, we're told to talk about what it does for us, to talk about the benefits of it, to talk about what it can do for you. When we talk about Islam, if we always talk about just the taklif and the obligations that we have, well, somebody might dry out or burn out. They'll say, this is too difficult for me. But if you talk to them and say, look, this is the effect. What will happen to you if you do this, if you take this path, which is incumbent upon us, but it still has benefits. And this is what we're going to talk about, that you reach al-maqam al-mahmud, which is the pinnacle, the highest spiritual position that someone can reach. Once they reach such a position, they begin to enjoy spirituality. We're going to be talking about that there are enjoyments in this world that are so great, that are so intense, they completely outweigh any other enjoyment in this world. That is when a person reaches this high position, that Allah gives them the tawfiq to get close to the Prophet of Islam, to get close to Imam Ali, Lady Fatima, Imam Hassan, and Imam Hussein. May our salutations be upon all of them. So this is great news for us, that as spiritual wayfarers, as people that are reading Ziyarat al-Ashura and crying for Imam Hussein, and enter the door of the mercy of Allah, they will be given a great reward. That is, inshallah, the status of al-maqam al-mahmud, the praiseworthy station.
Standing here alone on a land so far from home, place where angels cry. Where little children die. Hussein said goodbye. Praying some of them survive. The torture and the heat. They can't bear to watch him leave. They cry out, Hussein, ya Hussein.
We were talking about the final pinnacle of spirituality, which is Al-Maqam Al-Mahmud, the praiseworthy station. And it is important for us to know that spirituality and ubudiyat and worshiping God has effects and consequences. The first thing for us to do, so when we want to be a better slave of God and be a better servant of Allah, and we want to reach Al-Maqam Al-Mahmud, is to be aware that there are better enjoyments than just the material. That the spiritual enjoyments, if we truly reach them, they're unparalleled to anything. Many of you have maybe gone to Hajj, have gone to Ziyarat and visited the Ahlul Bayt. Many of you have cried during the nights of Muharram and these nights, these days. You feel an intense pleasure. Actually, you can maybe say you become intoxicated with this pleasure. Because the love of the Ahlul Bayt, the love of God, is the most enjoyment that we can have. Some of the narrations, they talk about this. It says, for example, Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about this in this narration, "Inna atyaba shay'in fil jannah wa ladhahu hubbullah." What is the most enjoyable thing? What is the best thing in heaven? He said, is the love of God. In heaven, with all the enjoyments, with everything that we can eat, anything that we can do, Imam Ali talks about the most lidha, atyab, the best thing that we can do in heaven, wa aladhahu, and the most enjoyable thing we can do, the most enjoyment that we can have, is love of God, wal hubbu fillah, and loving in God's way. What is loving in God's way? Loving, for example, the Ahlul Bayt, loving the Prophet of Islam because his love of his messenger, loving Imam Ali, loving Sayyidah Fatima, loving Imam Hassan, loving Imam Hussein alayhi salam, because you're loving in the way of God. This is atyab and alad, meaning these are the best and these are the most joyful things that we can do in heaven. My question to you is this: if this is the joy of the heaven, what is the difference between heaven and earth? Won't these things be a joy for us in this world? There are narrations that talk about, that make this and expand upon this enjoyment in heaven. And that is when we look at some of the hadith in Al-Kamil fi Ziyarat of Ibn Ghulawai. It talks about in heaven there will be a group of people. They'll be asked to enter heaven. It's in the Day of Judgment. They're sitting around and talking to Imam Hussein. It says they're Huddathul Hussein alayhi salam. They're speaking with Imam Hussein. Then they tell them to heaven, but they don't want to. They're sitting next to Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein is their heaven. Then the ladies of paradise come and they ask them, why don't you enter heaven? They say they don't even look up to see how they look like. They don't want to be distracted with talking to Imam Hussein. This is the reality of the matter. This is when a person reaches Al-Maqam Al-Mahmud, the praiseworthy station, there's entire joy will be spirituality. You can love life and the material too, but in the way of God. But when he reaches and tastes spirituality, and he tastes a little bit how great it is to cry for Imam Hussein, how great it is to be in the majlis of Imam Hussein, how great it is to do the ziyarat of Imam Hussein, he'll say, God, I wish I could save all my money and just to visit Imam Hussein one more time. Prophet Ibrahim, in a story, it says that once one of the angels, I believe it's Jibreel, came and he heard the thana of God. He heard the praise of God. And he said, "My Lord, what is this praise? This is such a great dhikr. This is such a great remembrance. I'll give half of my stock, half of my flock of sheep, if I can hear this one more time, the praise of my Lord, if I can hear it." So he hears it, and then he hears it one more time and says, "Oh Allah, I'll give the rest of my sheep, the rest of my flock, if I can hear this for another time." So when we compare spiritual benefits, spiritual joy, and we truly practice Islam in a way that you truly enjoy it, you reap the benefits of Islam, you will be blessed with a joy that outweighs all joys. And I believe that the followers and lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, they feel this the most. They feel halawatul iman, the sweetness of faith. So when a person reaches maqam al-mahmud, they reach the sweetness of faith, and inshallah, they'll be raised with the Prophet of Islam, with Imam Ali, Sayyidina Fatima, with Imam Hassan, with Imam Hussein, alayhi wassalam ajma'een, in the heaven, and inshallah, we will also be with them in this world too, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ahla baytihi tayyibin at-tahirin.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
So far this fiscal year, U.S. Border Patrol personnel have discovered 121 fraudulent vaccination cards, totaling 3,017 false cards, the agency said in a Friday, August 13th statement. The recipients of these cards were said to be all over the U.S. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Laura Enrian, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Tennessee Border Agents Seize Thousands of Counterfeit COVID-19 Vaccination Cards. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers in Memphis, Tennessee, said it captures hundreds of falsified COVID-19 vaccine cards daily. So far this fiscal year, U.S. Border Patrol personnel have discovered 121 fraudulent vaccination cards, totaling 3,017 false cards, the agency said in a Friday, August 13th statement. The agency confirmed it found the cards would come in packs of between 20 to 50 and 100 cards without any attempts to conceal them in anything. The counterfeit cards feature the logo of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and blank lines for filling in information such as names and dates of vaccination. They still have obvious traits of a falsified document, such as typos and misspelled the Spanish wording on the back, and that they were imported by a non-CDC or medical entity. The recipients of these cards were said to be all over the United States of America. These vaccinations are free and available everywhere, said Michael Niepert, Area Port Director of Memphis, adding that the U.S. Customs and Border Protection CBP already had other burdens to tackle in addition to this new illegal shipment. CBP officers at the area port of Memphis remain committed to stopping counterfeit smuggling and helping to protect our communities, he said, adding, but just you know that when you order a fake vax card, you are using my officer's time as they also seize fentanyl and methamphetamines. According to the FBI, using or commercializing counterfeit vaccine cards equates to unlawful use of a government agency deal such as HHS or CDC, which could result in a potential fine and up to 5 years in prison. Niebert said these vaccinations are free and available everywhere. If you do not wish to receive a vaccine, that is your decision. But don't order a counterfeit, waste my officer's time, break the law, and misrepresent yourself. After more reports from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, suggest how more contagious and lethal the Delta variant could be compared to the original virus that struck the world last year, the White House and other officials had begun increasing their demand that people get the jab. In several places across the U.S., vaccination has become mandatory. People would either lose their employment and be refused public services such as restaurants, theaters, and other indoor enterprises without a vaccine card. While the experimental vaccines were said to be effective in preventing severe illnesses and deaths, especially with the more dangerous Delta variant of COVID-19, not all people are prepared to accept the jabs. The reasons for rejecting them vary from different beliefs, medical complications, and uncertainties about the side effects from the vaccines, to a resistance to having their freedom of choice taken away. Meanwhile, in Florida, the reports that COVID-19 surge is so out of control that if the state were a nation, the U.S. would have to consider banning travel from its residents, warned an infectious disease expert. Infection levels in Florida have risen 51% in the last 7 days, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. The state reported 134,506 new COVID-19 cases from July 30 to August 5th, more than any other 7-day period. The viral load in Florida is so high right now, there are really only two places on the planet where it's higher: Louisiana and Botswana. Dr. Jonathan Rayner, a professor at George Washington School of Medicine and Health Sciences, said on CNN recently, adding, "It's so high in Florida that I think Florida, if it was another country, we would have to consider banning travel from Florida to the United States." And despite the soaring risk, GOP Governor Ron DeSantis is taking no precautions. In fact, DeSantis signed an executive order banning vaccination and mask mandates, including in public schools. He said he wants to allow freedom of choice for parents and like seeing the unmasked faces of smiling children. Some of those parents sued DeSantis, arguing that weak health regulations in Florida schools threaten the safety and lives of their children, denying them the right to an education.
It's night, dark and cold. I walk in the city alone in the crowd.
Islamic laws.
Every street, every store is filled with colors and smiles as before. I know clouds are hidden behind these faces. Is there anyone who has a sunny heart? I put on my headphones and play the song, which repeats in chanty whisper.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio and the program Islamic Laws, in which we are going to talk about the rules and fatwas of Ayatollah Khamenei, which are related to the month of Muharram and mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Before everything, let me express my condolences to the Imam al-Mahdi. May Allah hasten his reappearance and all the Muslims all around the world, especially the Shias, on this being the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his companions and family members. Like always, we are joined by our dear guest, Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, salamu alaikum, and thank you for accepting our invitation.
Salamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me on this program.
So as I mentioned, today we will answer to the questions asked from the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, but before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching Makassas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid, according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and his teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Welcome back. You are listening to Islamic Laws from IRIB English Radio. Sheikh Javid, today's first question is about mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and also saying the prayer on time or in the early portion of the time. Let me give you an example. For example, on the day of Ashura, people are mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam before the noon adhan or noon call for prayer, or on the night before Ashura, they are mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam before adhan al-Maghrib, at the time in the afternoon and before the sunset, and then they hear the call for prayer for like noon prayer in the day of Ashura or the night prayer on the night before Ashura. Now the question is that which is more important, the congregational prayer offered in the early portion of the time or continuing with azadari and mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam? And I think it happens a lot. I mean, this is a question for many Muslims, mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, especially the Shia. As I mentioned, the best example is the 2 days of Tasu'a and Ashura, the 9th and 10th of Muharram, because from early morning people are mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and then they hear the call for Zuhr prayer. Or we can think of the night, every night of Muharram, some people begin mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam before sunset, and then they hear the call for Maghrib prayer. Now the question is that which one is better, to continue with azadari or stop that and say the prayer on time?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, of course we do know that congregational prayer is a prayer which is offered in congregation. It's a wajib prayer offered in congregation, and
salat is obligatory. Congregational prayer is recommended.
Yeah, the prayer itself is wajib, but the congregational prayer is recommended. And of course, generally speaking, praying or offering prayer on time is more important, and precedence should be given to offering prayer on time. Now, to compare congregational prayer with azadari, of course, the religious authorities, including Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, are of the view that we should give importance and precedence to offering congregational prayer on time, see, because it's wajib, it is obligatory, mm-hmm. and we have to give importance to an obligatory act rather than a recommended act. Azadari is not wajib. No one considers azadari or mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam to be obligatory, but it is highly recommended, of course. So as you rightly mentioned, this is one of the frequently asked questions, and of course such incident does take place in different countries, especially I believe this event takes place a lot in the Indian subcontinent, because as far as I know, such coincidence takes place. The congregational prayer goes on, and at the same time, a Zadari or a Majlis is expected to be held. Now, which one to be given more importance? Obviously, the congregational prayer has to be offered first, and then, of course, the Azadari should be continued. And if it is difficult to stop, of course, Mu'minin can continue with their Azadari, because, for example, if Azadari is already going on, and if you stop it, the whole ceremony, of course, will come to an end.
But they need to arrange it in a way
arrangement.
That,
the arrangement has to be important. In such a way that the Azadari should not take place at the time of the wajib prayer. It has to come after it.
I work in the night with millions of stars. Your eyes pull me to you. Who are you? I walk in the day with millions of angels. I see you in all these faces. Who are you? One step I fade away, the next step I'm born again. You're flowing in my veins. Who are you? Wherever I get tired, you call me from far and near. To me,
and I believe that it is shown by Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam himself on the day
you're
of
right,
Ashura,
you're right, yeah.
When one of his companions told him that this is the time for Zohr prayer, and the Imam prayed for him, and Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam stopped continuing the war, and he began saying the prayer. And what is important is that Imam lost some of his companions during that prayer.
During that prayer.
It shows the importance of that prayer.
You're right.
And alhamdulillah, we see that recently in these years, at least on the day of Ashura, we see that alhamdulillah, all the mu'mineen, they, as you mentioned, arranged in on their azadari in a way that it finishes at the time of noon prayer. They say the congregational prayer, and then they continue mourning for Imam al-Hasan.
Right.
Now, on the same note, Sheikh Jawid, some may ask that we see that some people, again, maybe especially the youth, they like to mourn for Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam even late at night. And it causes some of them, because they sleep very late at night, then it they are sure that it will cause them somehow to lose morning prayer, if we may
You're
put
right.
it this way. And they are not able to wake up early in the morning, and it becomes qaza. So is it something, religiously speaking, encouraged for the youth to do that?
Well, it's absolutely forbidden to miss one's prayer. In the example that you gave, especially the young generation, the teenagers, who have attained puberty, they continue with Azadari until late midnight, and then in the morning some of them miss their prayers. That's an unfortunate thing. You know, it's not permissible to let your prayer be lapsed or to be missed. You know, it's very essential to offer your prayers and not to miss them. And also in this time around, you know, everybody has a mobile phone, everybody has access to an alarm clock which
true.
They can wind up and then so that the clock might ring him up and he can offer his prayers. So it's basically very important for every individual to understand the importance of prayer, the importance of fulfilling this duty and offering this and fulfilling this obligation. Prayer is the most important pillar And of course, if prayer is not accepted, if prayer is not, valid, then all other acts of worship will be affected. So if it's rejected, just as there's a saying from Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam, and also Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, if prayer is rejected, all other acts of worship, such as fasting, such as azadari, and the likes of such things, will be rejected as well.
At the end of the day, we are talking about an obligatory action like prayer and salat, and a recommended action that is mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So as you rightly mentioned, the preference should be given to the prayer. And I believe that, first of all, it is the duty of the scholars, especially those who have lectures during the month of Muharram, to explain this fact for the youth who are, I mean, their intention is very good, because they are going to show their love for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and they mourn for him. They love to mourn late at night. But this very important point should be, I believe, mentioned by the great Shia scholars, that they can have both, to mourn for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and not to lose the obligatory prayer.
Yes.
And second of all, it's the duty of those, again, who arrange these ceremonies. They can arrange it in a way that, because you see that people like to mourn for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam like 1 hour, 2 hours, so they can start the program earlier so that they can mourn and have enough time to sleep also during the night and wake up for the following day.
You're right.
Sheikh Javid, unfortunately we are running out of time. Again, I would like to thank you for your presence in this program. And again, I would like to express my condolences for these sad days of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and his companions and family members. Inshallah, we'll continue answering these questions in the following session. Till then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave, mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new land.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.